Shortcut. The car drifted, rumbled on the shoulder line, then crackled in the gravel. Dwayne popped awake, jerking the wheel, but too late, too quick, too hard, too something. The car skidded and hopped, the back end digging up turf on the bank, throwing clods in the air. Then the back wheels found the ditch, and that was that. Dwayne revved and spun it a few times, but he'd done this before, and he knew when it was pointless. And it was. It would take a wrecker or a tractor to pull him out. And he just hoped he hadn't broken a tie rod or a shock or bent up the bumper. He'd had a plan, but like most. Dwayne was doing the 6-10 shift at KCAG in Carlson, playing songs he didn't like. But it was a job in radio, which was about all he knew how to do. He could still say he had a career, was in the biz. It was a fat 2-hour drive back to Shorter. He'd get there for the last hour of the band and the beer garden, enough time to see everyone he gave half a shit about. He'd drink a few beers on the drive so he'd be in pace with everyone else when he arrived. Yeah, that was the plan. That would work. But Roger had arrived for his graveyard shift almost an hour late. Said his ex hadn't shown up on time for the kids. And then they'd had to do that shit with the transmitter. So Dwayne was slow getting out of town, having to stop at the liquor store for a cold 12, then back to his place for the bag he forgot. There was a bunch of construction on the interstate he hadn't heard about, and that slowed him down. Then all the two lanes and stoplights on the outskirts of bumfuck, and he didn't want to speed or blow through lights with an open beer and weed in the car. So, what now? This wasn't even the state highway. He'd taken the river blacktop, thinking that would shave off another few minutes. He hadn't seen a car in miles, and there would probably be few, if any, along at this hour. Hardly anybody lived out on this stretch anymore. These lowlands flooded every 4 or 5 years, and after every flood there were a few more houses gone, and a few more families who said, "That's the last time." Maddeningly enough, Dwayne could see the town from here. There was Little Shorter, an arm's length away, a handful of twinkling, fuzzy lights in the distance, the high red dot of the water tower, the line formation of the grain elevators. A faint amber glow arched over the profile of the town, a jaundiced rainbow. The river blacktop rejoined the state highway about a mile from where he was, but then it took a wide swing to the east, adding miles to as the crow flies distance. The junction was at the old Pisgah Gate Cemetery, where 3 years ago the Missouri River had taken a flood-driven rampage through the place, washing out the graves, sending vaults and coffins and bones across the fields. The water left what looked like a huge Halloween yard display, but the real thing. Dwayne knew all these back roads, had bicycled and hiked and parked and driven drunk through most all of them. There was a much shorter route than the state highway. I guess it was back to hiking now. He was sure he could find all the old familiar turns in the moonlight. He got his bag from the back seat, stuffed the rest of the beers into it, and started walking. The first mile was easy, a straight shot to the cemetery junction. No turns to miss. Only one farmhouse on the left, and it looked to be abandoned. As Dwayne approached the old cemetery, there was a new section where coffins and remains had been reburied, a pile of old broken tombstones piled up by the south gate like giant bone parts in the moonlight. Dwayne was surprised at the creeped-out feeling that was rising through his spine and up the back of his neck.
"Oh, fuck, man, grow up,"
Dwayne said loudly, his voice pinging an echo off a collapsed grain bin on the other side of the road. His head jerked in reflex in that direction.
"Fuck you," he told the grain bin.
Dwayne walked quickly past the entrance to the cemetery, consciously not looking out across the gravestones, even whistling a bit until he realized what a cliche that was. He crossed over Highway 10 and continued on a gravel road that angled off to the north, almost a compass path to shorter, though Duane knew there would be some jigs and jaunts to navigate. Still, a much quicker route than the state highway. The town of Carlson, where Duane lived and worked these days, and for the past several hundred days, was not a big place, less than 20,000. It was quite a bit smaller and several notches down from the larger radio markets he'd worked in the previous decade. But walking down this gravel road, miles from any street lights, long stretches between houses, Duane realized he almost never got outside the city limits of Carlson, and it had probably been years since he'd walked a gravel road. He knew it had been at least 10 years since he'd last visited Shorter. He no longer had family there, and no reason or route caused him to get anywhere close to the place. But this festival thing was a reason. Duane figured this might be the last time he'd see any of his old classmates again. He wasn't even sure why that mattered to him. He wasn't sentimental or nostalgic. Didn't ever expect to be. He knew that about half of them had moved away and maybe a quarter had inherited the family farm, and the other quarter just didn't have anywhere else to go. Breaking it down that way almost made Duane turn around and walk back to the car, sleep it off in the back seat. Maybe he just wanted to touch that base one more time before his radio career sank to an even lower point. He could still say he was playing music and talking on the airwaves instead of just reading the farm report or pushing the buttons for the next syndication. He kept walking. There were long, blind curves on the river bottom back roads and certain rises and falls of the land. No, this place wasn't as flat as people think. Flashbulbs of memory were coming to the surface, most of them good, some of them hilarious, others stupid and downright dangerous. It had been a good place to grow up, but also a good place to leave. Duane popped a now warm beer and kept going. After walking for a lost amount of time, at least long enough to finish that beer and start another, Duane came to a T in the road. A large tree stood dead center across a fence, the scars in the bark visible in the moonlight. Another flashbulb. Duane was pretty sure some kid several years older than him, seemed like his name was Donnie, didn't make the turn and bought it on that tree. The flashes kept coming. It used to be that when there was a fatal crash, either on the back roads or out on the highway, it always seemed to happen on a Saturday night. The wrecked car would be towed over to a service station and salvage yard in Cooperton and parked out front for a couple days. Sunday afternoon, people would stop and get out and hover around the death car, looking for blood or whatever. Duane could remember clearly at least two occasions where his dad took the whole family to Cooperton to get ice cream cones and stop and look at a fresh wreck. It seemed normal, just something to do. Everybody did it. Now, left or right, Duane was trying to see this from overhead, from the bird's eye, to remember where each branch of the road headed. Town was still more or less straight ahead, though he couldn't see it now for some rises and low spots and overgrown creek lines. He'd been daydreaming, not keeping his eye on the water tower light. This crossroad was perpendicular to his intended path, and it was too dark to tell how far each arm went before it turned, or in what direction. 50-50, he headed left, chucking an empty at the tree. "Here's one for you, Donnie," Duane said. He missed the tree. Several minutes, several stops, Duane squinted into the darkness ahead to try to make out the direction of the road. The gravel had thinned, and it was mostly packed dirt now, which blended into the night and the shadows. He could see a distant pole light here and there across the fields, tall with corn or low with beans now, but no indication of their proximity to town. Another few minutes of walking, and the road turned sharply, but back to the south, the opposite direction Duane needed to go. At least, he thought that was the wrong way. Shit.
He doubled back, picking up his pace a little. There was the car-wrecked tree ahead of him again. He took another beer from his bag, nodding slightly at the tree as he popped the top. Duane could tell this arm of the road was curving slightly, a long, gradual arc, but also back to the south, the wrong direction. At least there was a rise to this part of the road, and eventually Duane was past the overgrown creek line. He could see the lights of Shorter again, though it looked smaller and farther away than it had a half hour ago. Shit, shit. As the crow flies, that's what he'd have to do. What other choice did he have? He sure as hell didn't want to stay out here in the sticks for the whole fucking night. Duane was pretty certain he would come up against some fences and ditches and just hoped he didn't fall down or end up at a creek he couldn't cross. He was on the edge of a bean field, but it looked like a pretty poor crop, probably no higher than his knees, as far as he could see in the moonlight. An easy walk through, at least for the start. Duane dropped his bag over the fence, stuck a toe inside a square of wire, and worked his way over the top. Geez, when was the last time he'd done that? Duane took off long stepping across the field, not worrying too much about trampling on these piss-poor soybeans. He kept glancing at the flashing light atop the Shorter water tower now and then to stay heading in as straight a bearing as possible. He'd pretty much lost track of time, with all the doubling back and daydreaming and remembering he'd been doing. But he figured it had to be getting close to one. Maybe there'd still be a few old friends shutting down the beer garden, or maybe just having some beers in a parking lot. Hoped so. The beans got a little taller the farther Duane walked, but he felt like he was making good time, getting a little harder to push through the taller and thicker rows, and the night dew was settling now. He remembered summers when he was in junior high and early high school, before farmers started using herbicides to keep the weeds down. Every kid who wanted a job could find one working in the bean fields. It was a simple job, but it wasn't easy or pleasant. Funny, the common expression was that you had a job hoeing beans. But Duane never knew anybody who brought a damn hoe out into the fields. No, everybody came with a machete, a corn knife. With wild sunflower stalks thicker than an inch, no hoe was going to cut those suckers down. Most of the work was in July and August, when the beans had grown up pretty good, but so had the weeds. By noon, it would be too hot to work, so the crews would get started by 5 a.m. if they could. And crew might be overstating it a bit. It was usually just four or five kids, boys and girls, and a couple of moms. Seemed like it was a job that grown men never did. Arriving early morning at a soybean field in the bottoms, hell, Duane might have worked the very one he was plodding through now, was a beautiful sight. For about 5 minutes, the early morning fog and settling dew over the acres of deep green was silent and peaceful, but unbelievably cold to the body. Wading into the chest-high beans was like walking into a pond in the winter. You knew you were going to be miserably hot in about 2 hours, but first you had to be miserably cold and ice-soaked through to the skin within a few minutes. That was how every day started. It ended with scratches and cuts from sharp leaves and thorns, layers of grime and mud and sweat, and more mosquito bites than you could reach. After 3 summers in the bean fields, Duane started looking for indoor work, preferably with air conditioning. He hadn't worked outdoors since. Until tonight. And this was really starting to seem like work. His shoes were a mess, totally caked up with mud from the damp rows. Must have rained here in the past couple days. They felt like concrete blocks on his feet. His jeans were pretty soaked up to the thighs. Duane was starting to get tired, almost sleepy. But he had to be closer to the town than he was to his car by now. Keep going. Luckily, Duane hadn't come to any more fences. No, just seemingly endless muddy rows of wet beans, getting taller and thicker and wetter the farther he walked. Thin clouds passed over the moon now and then,
making it hard to see if he was going to run into anything besides more soybeans. Why hadn't he grabbed the flashlight out of the glove box? But he would have bet money the batteries were dead anyway. The clouds were thicker now, as was the darkness. Duane could make out something ahead of him, some change in the terrain, or a large object, maybe a low building, coming up in front of him. He slowed and squinted as he closed in, making out a wire fence ahead, and on the other side, a solid wall of tall corn, well over his head, 8, maybe 10 feet high. Duane looked left, looked right, and it was corn and darkness as far as he could see in either direction.
"Well, fuck,"
Duane groaned as he sat in the dirt and leaned against the wire fence, taking another warm beer out of his bag. Oh yeah, he would really impress his old buds, maybe even some old girlfriends, showing up in soaked jeans, covered in mud and grass and burrs, and pretty drunk on top of it. And goddamn, he was getting tired. Hell, they were probably all on their way home by now, if they had been there at all. Duane had just lost sight of the water tower beacon as he approached the wall of corn, but he knew it was pretty much straight ahead. And fortunately, the corn rows ran perpendicular to the beans he had just plotted across. If the rows didn't curve too much, or head off in some crazy angle, they seemed to be lined up due north, straight toward the town. He sure hoped so. Duane took a piss, went over the fence and into the dark tunnel of a corn row. The moon was breaking through again, giving him enough light through the tall stalks and leaves and tassels to not immediately get claustrophobic and panicky. He'd had this dream before, running down a dark, endless hallway, and the walls keep getting tighter and tighter.
"Oh, shut up," Duane said out loud. "You're freaking yourself out, so stop it."
Keeping his head down and centered as possible to mostly avoid the stiff, sharp leaves, Duane ducked and bobbed and brushed his way down the row. The harsh shushing of the leaves mixed together with insects and frogs into a heave that made Duane imagine the field was breathing heavy along with him. He stopped and looked up at the moon, wondering how the fuck he had ended up in the middle of a cornfield late on a Saturday night. This was a new one. Duane stopped his breath, held it for a moment, realizing that the hushed sighing of the night continued without him and was centered a few rows over. Then it stopped, dropped a few notches, leaving only the low drone of the bugs. Was something moving in the rows beside him, behind him? He tilted his ears this way, that way, listening for movement. He knew that out here in the river plains there wasn't much to fear. No wildcats, certainly no bears. Worst it could be was a coyote, more likely a raccoon or possum, or, hell, a skunk.
"Yeah, that's all I need,"
Duane muttered. "That would make this a perfect fucking night." He walked a bit faster now, getting lost in the idea that maybe he wasn't really here, wasn't really doing this, that maybe this was just a weird dream. The rhythm of his breathing got in step with the pace of his walking and found the beat and tempo of a random song. Very random. It was the first song he'd ever learned in grade school, lurking way down deep in memory, now making the surface.
"See my pony, jet black pony, I ride him each day. When I give him oats to eat, trotting, trotting go his feet. See my pony, jet black pony, I ride him each day."
"Holy fuck," Duane said, shaking his head. But he smiled at the recollection of kindergarten voices on the melody. He had loved that song. It was a small and simple memory of clear happiness, back when it was easy. The cornfield went on, and Duane and his jet black pony kept moving forward. The height of the corn stalk started tapering down,
like Duane was walking out of a long snowdrift. When the corn was low enough that he could see the surrounding countryside and the lights of the town to his left now, apparently the rows had curved off to the east as he walked. Duane knew right where he was. The field tapered off to scrub and patchy weeds, and across a fence was a gravel road and a small iron bridge over Weed Creek. As a kid, he had shot off fireworks on this bridge one summer, dropping black cats into the water, trying to get the timing right so they would explode just after going under. Drop it too soon, and the fuse would be extinguished. Drop it too late, and you risked losing a finger. Another neighbor kid, Craig Fisher, had set off a whole string of black cats on the bridge floor, right behind Duane. The sound of the rapid explosions had pinged between the iron beams of the bridge, giving Duane hearing loss for several days after, and the beginnings of a lifetime of tinnitus. This bridge and the road leading up to it were also one of the favorite parking spots for Duane and his high school girlfriend, old what's-her-name. Yeah, don't fool yourself, buddy. You know her name. It was the first name you just couldn't get out of your head, and it may be the last one to leave. They'd broken up after high school. She went on with her education, and Duane headed for California for a career in sex, drugs, and radio. A little too much focus on the first two. A long, slow breakup from the last. She'd done quite well in real estate over in St. Louis. Was on some state board, last he'd heard. Duane had walked the short gravel stretch and was standing on the bridge as all these thoughts and ghosts ran through his mind. The half moon was out again now, bright enough to cast faint shadows across the old planks of the bridge floor. Duane could see a rusted 50-gallon barrel and the remains of an old washing machine down in the mud and the shallow water and weeds. He could picture some locals pulling up in a beat-up pickup saying, "Here's just as good as anywhere." Time was jumping all over the place. Making out on the bridge with her seemed like forever, and just a few hours ago. The firecrackers were still ringing in his ears, would be forever. That fucking barrel and washing machine might have been there when he was in high school, and he just never noticed. Town was behind him now, and he knew what was ahead, in the wrong direction. Just around the next bend was the gate to the old city dump. But Duane was pretty sure it closed a decade or so ago, when the county went to waste management, weekly pickup, contracts to somebody's brother. He remembered coming out to the dump with his dad to get rid of old fence and wood scraps. It was like a different planet beyond the dump gate. Mountains of scrap metal, downed trees, occasionally a dead deer or cow, and piles of unidentifiable decay. Something was always on fire, smoke and smolder and stink. There was an old man, hunched and dirty and scary to kids, named Spinach Johnson, who managed the dump back then, actually lived in a shack on the grounds. Whenever Duane would pass the place, he would often see Spinach up on the heap of scrap metal and wrecked cars, going at it with a wrench or a hacksaw. An old man, Duane figured he was probably only 50. He was one of those beings that was hanging on to existence and humanity by the threads of his worn-out coat. But next to his shack, from the spring to the late fall, Spinach always kept a large and picture-perfect vegetable and flower garden, completely out of place with the rest of the surroundings and his own haggard appearance. He'd give surplus vegetables to anyone who stopped by. Thus, the name. Duane hadn't been out here in years. The gate was new tube steel, shiny white enamel. Beyond it rose the banks of a landfill, with exhaust ports poking up through the ground here and there. He squinted, surprised to see a small fire burning about 50 yards off, just where the flat of the old dump yard met the new rise of the landfill. He climbed up and over the gate. It might have been unlocked, he didn't even check. Heading toward the distant campfire, Duane could see dozens of trash bags and boxes and crap that had been chucked over the fence, at least in the general direction of the landfill. The county picked up stuff at your house for free, Why would people drive out here and dump it? He'd never understand. Someone was sitting by the fire. Duane shook his head, to no one in particular. It didn't seem possible. Or right. It was Spinach Johnson sitting there, holding a long wire with a hot dog on the end. He truly was an old man now. But he didn't look that different than how Duane remembered him.
"Now, go on and leave me alone if you're looking for a drink or something,"
Spinach shouted at Duane, startled by his solitude interrupted.
"I ain't got nothing and just this one dog, so just go on back where you came from. Leave me alone." Mr. Johnson?
Duane couldn't remember if people called him Spinach to his face or not.
"I don't mean to bother you, and I don't know if you'll remember me, but I'm Duane, Duane Trotter. I grew up here. I haven't been around for a while. But I do remember you from when my dad would bring stuff out here to the dump. My dad was Mitchell Trotter. He's been gone a long time."
Spinach Johnson just stared at Duane, blinked a couple times.
"You got anything to drink?"
he asked.
Well, yeah, actually I do. I got two beers. They're pretty warm by now." "I won't share my dog, but I would take one of them beers, if you would."
"You can have them both. I've had more than I need tonight already. Say, I thought the dump was closed down a few years back. What's the deal?"
"Yeah, they don't let people just drive out here and get rid of stuff no more. But as you can see back there by the gate, some folks never get the message. Just can't change their ways, dumb shits."
Spinach Johnson turned the hot dog slowly on the wire.
"And, of course, I ain't got a job no more. Not for a long time. Truth is, I never really had me an official job. I wasn't on no payroll. The city council folks would just slide me a little money now and then to take care of shit out here. I did that for over 20 years. And I got a little extra, salvaging metal and parts."
Duane looked around. Wasn't much to see.
"So, not that it's any of my business, but how come you're out here now?" "You're right about that. It ain't none of your business. But you give me them two beers, pull up a bucket. I don't mind having some company."
Duane came closer and sat down on a white plastic bucket, the upside-down word pickles handwritten in faded marker on the side. He reached in his bag, pulled out one beer, then the other, handed both to Spinach Johnson. The fire felt good through his damp jeans.
"They still let me keep a little garden plot out here, the city does."
Spinach popped open the beer and took a long drink, nodded at Duane.
"Much obliged. I think they just hope the county folks don't notice. There's a bunch of regulations now about who can be around the landfill and who can't. And they never did tear down my little house, miracle of miracles. It's still over there past them trees."
And Spinach Johnson pointed into the darkness.
"I sometimes still spend the night out here, when I'm too tired to walk home after working the garden. Sometimes just for a change of scenery, for old times,"
he said with a sad smile. Duane found it hard to believe or understand that a man could be nostalgic for his former life at a garbage dump.
"So, where do you live now?" "Oh, I got put up in one of them new government old age apartments down there past the grade school. They're pretty nice. Nicest place I've ever lived, for sure. But the other folks there are none too friendly. They act like they're better than me. They act like I still smell of the dump."
Duane didn't know what to say to that. He just nodded.
"So, your daddy was Mitchell Trotter, huh? He always seemed like a square guy to me. Always treated me fair and looked me in the eye when he talked. He was a carpenter, wasn't he?"
"Yeah, he started out building houses, doing the work himself, but then he became a contractor, farming it out to other people, organizing the whole thing. He did pretty well with that, sent me and my sister to college." Spinach Johnson held the beer between his knees, took the hot dog off the wire with bare fingers, bit off the end and chewed.
"So, you got your education and never came back, huh?"
Duane stared into the fire.
"That's kind of the short version. I loved growing up here, but I couldn't do what I wanted to staying around here. I ended up working in radio, still do, over in Carlson."
Spinach Johnson stared at Duane like he'd never heard of the place, like he had no idea what a person might do in radio.
Or at least he didn't care enough to ask anything about it.
Hey, you want to see something?
Spinach asked, a sudden change of tone. Duane paused, couldn't imagine what there could be of interest to see out here, particularly in the dark.
Like what?
Spinach Johnson squinted as the wind shifted and blew smoke into his eyes.
I bet when you was a kid, coming out here with your daddy, that you thought I was that crazy old hunchback who lived in them junk cars. Probably thought I ate rats and squirrels, didn't you?
Well, I heard squirrels and possums, but not rats. Duane smiled, hoping that Spinach didn't take offense at that.
And I knew where you lived in that little house. I'd see your garden, and I think I remember you giving us a bunch of tomatoes and peppers one time.
Well, huh. You was paying attention, wasn't you? Glad to hear at least one damn kid didn't think I was an animal. Come on.
He got up and walked into the darkness, taking a small flashlight out of his back pocket. Duane watched for a second as Spinach and the beam cut into the night. Then he got to his feet and followed, catching up. The flashlight lit the short path around a small group of trees, and Duane could make out the shack where Spinach Johnson had lived. It looked about the same, had never known a coat of paint, much less siding. The metal roof looked to have a shine in the moonlight. Must be new. Newer. Spinach Johnson pulled open the screen door, held the flashlight in his teeth, and twirled a large combination lock on the bracket to the inside door. Then he reached inside the door and flipped the light switch.
Wow, you've got power out here,
Duane said from down the path, surprised.
I always figured...
But he stopped there.
Oh yeah, always have,
Spinach nodded.
I don't know who's paying for it, but it ain't me. Come on in, here's what I wanted to show you.
Duane watched his step up the rooted path, then stopped as he held open the screen door. He tried to figure out just what he was seeing in the small lighted room. An expanse of texture and pastel colors. Every square inch of wall space, almost the whole ceiling, nearly everything but the windows and floor, were covered in plastic flowers. Bunches and arrangements and wreaths and sprays, all tight and even against the walls, not a staple or wire visible. Most were faded to a washout of their original hue, giving the feeling of a watercolor or an old photo left in the sun.
What do you think?
Spinach Johnson asked with a strange smile, knowing Duane didn't expect anything like this. Duane paused.
I know what it is, but tell me why it is. It is pretty, unexpected, and a little weird, but... pretty.
Spinach pointed around the room.
Started a long time ago, he said. After every Memorial Day and Easter and sometimes Christmas, the sexton out at the cemetery, Dooley Martin, do you remember him? Well, he'd clean off the graves of all the plastic flowers and bring them out here to the dump. Wasn't nothing else he could do with them if people didn't take them back home after a time. So I saved a few of them to cheer my place up a little. Yeah, two or three times a year there'd be another load, and I just kept saving them, tacking them to the wall. I guess it just became a habit, a hobby, and I liked how it looked. It surprised me every time I walked in the room, even though I knew it was here. Your mind just don't expect such a thing. You're only about the third person I ever showed it to.
I'm honored, Duane said, and he meant it, hoped he didn't sound facetious. Spinach Johnson pointed to the bare spot in the corner of the ceiling, about 4 feet square.
See that? That's when they closed the dump. No more flowers. I don't know what they do with them now. Probably stuff them in a trash bag somewhere.
Duane looked around the room. There was a cot and a folded blanket, but that was it.
You asked me what I was doing out here, and I told you,
Spinach Johnson said.
So what the fuck are you doing out here? At all?
Oh... I was driving in to catch the tail end of the beer garden tonight. Hoped to see some old friends,
Duane sighed.
But my car broke down out on the river road, and I decided to just cut across the fields and walk it in.
Well, that was a bad decision. That's miles from here. Why didn't you just hitch it on the highway?
Probably shoulda. I'm the king of bad decisions. I've probably missed the whole thing. Spinach spoke excitedly now.
You know, I got to ride in that helicopter today. It was the damnedest thing. I'd never been off the ground in my whole life. I felt like Superman. It was really something. And it was eye-popping beautiful. I'll never forget it. But I don't never want to do it again. It made me kind of sick.
Spinach suddenly turned and headed for the door, flipping off the light switch, leaving Dwayne standing in the middle of the room in the dark.
I guess we're going, huh? Dwayne said.
Well, you are. I'm walking back to put the fire out, then I'm going to bed. I'm going to sleep out here tonight. Hey, don't tell nobody about my flowers, okay? The less people say about me, the better.
They walked together back to the fire. Then Dwayne split off and headed for the gate.
It was nice to talk to you tonight,
Dwayne said over his shoulder.
Yeah, there's a first time for everything,
Spinach Johnson said as he kicked dirt over the coals. Dwayne figured he could almost walk to town with his eyes closed. These local roads were so familiar to him, even though he hadn't been on them in years. He nearly needed to, at least one eye at a time. He was so tired and still pretty drunk. The gravel of the dump road met the state highway right at the edge of town. City limit. Shorter. Population 607. Dwayne picked up a rock and threw it at the sign, surprising himself by actually hitting it, a dull metallic bell, loud in the night. Reflexively, Dwayne looked around to see if anyone saw him. What was he thinking? Nobody. Nowhere. Dwayne crossed the highway to the end, or the beginning, of Fifth Street, a long straight shot that went past the grade school. Due to lack of foresight or planning or space or something, the high school was on the other side of town, a distance from the grade school. Dwayne looked out through the chain link, across the huge schoolyard that contained the same old playground, the same old baseball diamond, the same football field and parking lot that had always been there long as he could remember. The exact same swings, teeter-totter, and slide that he'd played on in grade school. Heck, those things seemed old when he was a kid. Guess they were built to last. Dwayne could clearly see the playground equipment because all the floodlights were on at the football field, bright and crisp as daylight, a strange sight in the silence and emptiness of the hour. He cut across the playground, giving the old swings a push and a spin as he passed, remembering the thrill of going far and wide and jumping out at the highest point, those few seconds of weightlessness and flight, the impact of coming back to Earth. It was a stadium without seats, without fans or players, same size as any professional field, lifted out of those domed monstrosities and dropped between a cornfield and a grade school. The field lines were dim, but still there, not to be freshly chalked again until fall. Dwayne walked onto the field at the 50-yard line, looking up at the lights on the high mast poles, down at the bloom of dim shadows he cast, multiples of himself, looking around for someone. Surely someone was here, doing something. But no, it was just him. He walked out to the middle of the field, to the large S that marked the center, and sat down. Dwayne never played football, avoided all sports if he could. The only time he ever set foot on the football field was when the marching band performed at halftime. Even then, he felt like he was trespassing. Dwayne lay back and stretched out, laced his fingers behind his head. Above him was all blackness, circled by the intense glare of the field lights, wiping out any stars. He closed his eyes, drifted, fell asleep. Seconds? Minutes? An hour? Dwayne really didn't know. The breeze was warm, but his skin was chilled. He had a momentary panic that a tractor mower was headed for him, but it was just the roar of a semi out on the state highway. He squinted into the field lights. Was it morning now? No, still darkness beyond the lights. He needed to pee, but not here.
Duane got to his feet, looking around. There must be someone here, watching him or fixing something or cleaning up. Still no one. He walked out of the rectangle of light, dropping off sharply into haze and shadows, to the back door of the school building. "This door will be unlocked," his own voice in his head. It was, huh? Duane opened the big glass double door, imagined his own small self running out these doors to recess. He eased the door quietly shut, the click of the latch reverberating down the hallway. It was stuffy and dank inside, air of industrial cleaner, old books, and still the faint sour smell of sweaty children. He stood very still, prepared to hear something, the hum of a blower, or a shuffle of papers, even half expecting to hear faint laughter. Dead stillness of air and sound. Duane walked down the dim hallway, stepping as quietly as he could, for no reason. He even considered taking off his shoes, but didn't. Checked a couple of classroom doors. They were locked. He well knew where the bathrooms were, halfway down this hallway. He thought about using the girls, that being the only room in this whole building he had never been in, but went for the boys, needing a urinal. He took a chance and flipped on the lights, the flashing and humming of fluorescence jarring his senses, pinching his face. He nearly laughed, just grinned, the row of urinals being about at his knees. Taking careful aim, did what he needed to do, decided not to flush. That would be someone else's problem. "Why am I in here? What did I expect to find or see or leave? Guess I just needed a bathroom." Another set of double doors, these being solid wood, each with a single window, opened to the small grade school gymnasium, which doubled as the lunchroom. There were four large skylights, giving the room a dreamy glow from the moon. More smells, setting off memories and contracting time. In here, it was ketchup and sour milk cartons, deep fat and burned meat, even though he was sure there had been none of those present for months. He walked through the door into the kitchen and serving line. Darker in here, but the stainless steel surfaces still caught the light from the windows. Hanging above the prep tables was a long line of large industrial cookware, pots and vats and colanders and spatulas. Duane took down a large pot, then another, then everything he could easily reach. He laced his fingers into as many pot handles and loops as he could, carried things out into the hallway, making two trips, three. Vandalism? No, he was too old for that. He carefully placed the pans and such in a long, perfectly even row down the length of the hall, going back twice for more cookware until he had most all of it. Not much made Duane smile these days, but this did. It didn't make any sense or statement, didn't serve any purpose, but he liked it. And there was the great unknown of who would find it this way and what they would think. Maybe they would believe in ghosts. He walked up and down the length of the hall, viewing the lineup from different angles, the most fun he'd had in months. Huh. There were the front doors. Better go now. Alarm set? Probably not. Duane pushed the bar and walked out into the night air, cool and fresh and alive after the stale silence of the school. He was sobering up, about halfway back, getting a little bit of second wind. Time didn't matter now. He'd missed the whole thing, at least the thing he thought he had come for. It was something else now. A last visit? Goodbye? Hello again? Didn't really matter what you called it. He didn't have a plan, didn't have a phone number to call, didn't know who lived where anymore. Just keep walking, I guess. Of course, he needed to go by the old house where his family had lived, where he had grown up and grown bored. It had been a fine house when he was small, and his dad was alive to keep it up. But after Mitchell died, and Duane and Martha had gone off to school, never to live in Shorter again, their mom had a hard time keeping ahead of such a big old house. She had sold it during one of those stretches when Duane was out of touch, and had moved to a retirement development in North Arkansas. Duane was pretty shocked when he found out about it. Martha had never forgiven him for being AWOL when all that went down, for not being around to help empty the house and get their mom moved. She had had several good years in Arkansas, though Duane had never got around to visiting her there, and only talked to her on the phone a handful of times. According to talk, she was active and healthy, and died in her sleep on a Sunday night 3 years ago. Duane didn't come back for the funeral. He hadn't come back before, seemed phony and pretentious to come back for that. At least, that was the reasoning he'd landed on. But he was back now, and nobody knew, and nobody cared. And Duane was fine with that. In fact, better to be here and invisible than to have to deal with the discomfort of figuring out who was who and what to talk about. No, this felt okay. He felt like he could breathe, could take it in. It was his. The potholed street, this would be Carter Street, the street Duane grew up on, was a zigzag of street lamps and random angles of carelessly parked cars. In the one short block, there were two houses that had junkers on cinder blocks sitting in the side yards. Some yards were tidy and mowed, some were overgrown. The last house on the end, across from another damn bean field, that was his. Duane stood in the middle of the street and stared at the old house. No cars passed, not a sound. He felt like he had walked into an old black and white photo, the moonlight and street lamp throwing enough for shape, but not color. He thought someone was on the porch, but it was just a coat over the back of a chair. It was hard to tell if anyone lived in the house or not. Yeah, there was the coat on the chair, but the yard was untended. There were boxes and trash bags piled on the porch. No cars in the driveway, not even a dim light from the windows. Duane walked closer, up the center sidewalk, stopping at the steps. There was that dry stillness of a house where nobody lived. He quietly went up the steps, across the porch to a window, cupped his hands around his eyes to see inside. A couch? Or just more boxes? Duane couldn't tell in the dark interior. This door will be unlocked. Same voice in his head as at the school. Duane touched the knob to try it, and the door swung open with a long, slow creak. It hadn't even been latched or completely closed. Duane stood on the doorway threshold, took in the ambience of the room, familiar even in silence, a change of pressure and bounce. And smells. Home permanence, Play-Doh, shoe polish, bread, hot dogs. God, it was all there, all at once, as subtle as a chance of rain. Duane walked inside, his eyes adjusting to the dark. It was a couch in the living room, but very little else. A card table with a sprung leg was leaning against the wall. A single folding chair, on it a jigsaw puzzle box. Things left behind. Flat on the white brick fireplace mantel was a small framed photo of someone, looked like maybe a young boy. Duane didn't think it was him. Hard to tell in the dark of the room. Wonder why they didn't take that. There was an empty beer can beside it. In his memory, Duane saw Christmas trees in the corner, throw rugs on the floor, and a tiny TV, generations of dogs and cats running through. He saw his dad's vinyl recliner, and Mitchell getting up or nodding off. His sister pulling the long coily phone cord around the corner into the hallway to get some privacy. His mom just doing whatever needed to be done next. Always something, always for somebody else. Nothing bad had happened here. He had no flashbacks to avoid or blames to dredge up. Duane remembered how the regularness, the dependability of all this became the thing he had to get away from. He needed to not know what was going to happen next. Duane waved a hand through the air, dispersing an invisible fog, pushing things back into the past where they belonged. Stay there. He left the room and walked down the always too narrow hallway, the squeak of the floorboards echoing through the empty house. Sticking his head in the kitchen, it was too dark to see anything. Without even looking or thinking, Duane reached for the light switch as he had done thousands of times, years before. In squinting surprise, the overhead globe came on, bringing bright focus and uncomfortable detail to the dirty kitchen. Mouse turds on the counter and stove, a few dirty dishes in the sink, empty cardboard boxes stacked by the back door. A mess for somebody else to clean up. Duane thought of all the apartments he had vacated, and all the shit and crap furniture he had left behind, simply walked away from and never thought of again. As soon as that key was dropped off, it just didn't exist. Deposit be damned. Duane quickly shut the light off. He didn't want anybody calling the marshal on him for trespassing or breaking and entering, though no breaking had taken place. He closed his eyes and stood still, taking a moment to let the blinding brightness of the kitchen fade away. The afterimage on his retina held long enough to merge with the memory of his mother in her worn path between sink and stove. This was getting thick. Backtracking down the hall, Duane wondered if there would be enough light to see anything upstairs, or whether he would trip just trying. He craned his neck around the corner into the dark staircase. The long, narrow space, distant from any windows, always spooked him when he was small, even when the lights were on. Many nights, speeding down the steps two at a time, he would feel the distinct creep of someone behind him. He put a hand on the wall, the old plaster, cold and almost wet in the closed-up humid air. Over the years, someone had carpeted the steps so they were quieter than Duane remembered, just faint muffled creaks as he ascended. The only reverberation was the old feeling that someone was behind him, or maybe above him and around the corner. Duane felt like he had been dealing with specters all night, and he was getting damn sick of it. A quick walk through the upstairs and he'd be out of here. Top of the stairs, a central landing, five doors. His sister's bedroom, his parents' bedroom, the bathroom, a storage closet. The last door opened to another, still narrower staircase that led up to the low-ceilinged third floor, which had been Duane's bedroom and private domain. Nobody ever went up there but him. His mom would set clean clothes and bedding on the steps for Duane to take up when they were ready. His dad would stand at the bottom and yell if he needed Duane for something, or there was a phone call for him. Sister Martha avoided it like boy stink. After one long staircase, it was just too much work and bother for anyone to go up another, which had suited Duane fine and given him unchallenged privacy. This staircase had never bothered him. Just the opposite. It had always been the gateway to comfort and security and secrets that no one peeked into. He had left cigarettes and Playboys laying out in the open, had smoked pot out on the porch roof, had even kept a stocked styrofoam beer cooler for a while before it leaked all over the floor. He'd made out and groped with a few girls on the bed, and had jacked off so many times up here that even now it made him uncomfortable to think about it. But it was dark, very dark in the room, and Duane didn't want to risk turning on the light. The third floor window on the front of the house shone like a beacon for blocks around. He didn't want to attract attention, didn't really need to see the room. It was crisp and clear and permanent in his memory. No need to mess that up. He would keep that snapshot unaged and untouched. Duane walked solidly back down the stairs. On the landing, about to go down the second staircase and get the hell out of there, Duane paused and looked at the other closed doors, thought of those people he never saw, would never see again. Something close to regret crossed his mind, but he chased it away. He put his hand on the knob of the door to his parents' room. The door opened silently, and Duane stepped inside. The room was awash of purple and amber. Shadows of catalpa leaves dicing the light from the neighbor's tall pole lamp coming in the curtainless bay window. The lifting breeze put it all into motion, rhythm, and sway. The rise and fall of the patterns gave broken definition to the objects in the room. More boxes, two chairs and a small table piled with books, a chest of drawers, and a bed. A bed with pillows and top sheet, a blanket wadded at the foot. Figures in the bed breathed slow and deep, the unmannered huffs of tired animals. The body closest to the window snorted and choked every few seconds. Duane watched them, then closed his eyes. Maybe the night and the beer and the exhaustion had gotten the best of him. But when he opened his eyes, it was all still there. The lights, the shadows, the sleeping bodies. The wind shifted, a branch moved, and a torn circle of light was thrown across the face of the nearer person, an older woman sleeping on her back, no one Duane thought he recognized. She squinted in her sleep, then opened her eyes and looked out blankly into the darkness, not in Duane's direction. She lay there motionless, but seemingly awake for several long minutes, occasionally raising her eyebrows and opening her eyes very wide. Duane had been holding his breath, but eventually relaxed and just watched her, an unconscious acceptance that he was invisible. Finally, she rolled over and pulled the sheet around her shoulders, tightened it at the neck.
"Darwin has the cat,"
she garbled and drifted away. Duane heard himself sigh. It was louder than he expected. The woman shifted slightly, but settled into stillness. Duane walked out of the room, not even trying to be quiet. The landing, the doors, the stairs, someone behind him, no one behind him. The first floor was noticeably cooler when Duane reached the bottom step and crossed the living room, heading for the door. One last time, he thought. But instead of leaving, Duane doubled back down the hallway, into the kitchen, turning on the light without hesitation this time. The countertops and linoleum were crazy familiar to him in the full light. Really, a shock of time travel. Electric sockets, cabinet door pulls, a dent in the refrigerator front. Duane felt like he could see his family's fingerprints and smudges on every surface. All that was in the refrigerator was an open pack of hot dogs, a bag of two buns, and three Pabst Blue Ribbons, still stuck in the six-pack ring. He grabbed all of it, left the kitchen light on. Duane sat down on the couch in the living room, fixed himself a snack. He didn't hurry, didn't try to be quiet. He smiled, actually chuckled at this memory and that one, thoughts of stupid neighbor kids, and pursed regrets at being mean to one of them, Ricky Simmons. Wondered where he was now, probably not far. Two dogs on buns, two without, one beard down with them. Duane left the trash and crumbs on the couch, never a thought of what the sleeping people would think. He didn't care. It didn't matter. He'd take these other two PBRs with him. One more trip back through the first floor, turning on the light in each room, even the one above the staircase. He walked out the front door, picked up a bag of trash and an empty box from the porch, set them square in the open doorway. Duane didn't reason why he did this. It just seemed like a needed motion, a ritual step, a dance move. Duane was back in the street, walking without decision. The slightest glow of pink was on the east horizon now. The names Cinderella and Dracula shot across his consciousness. The car and the bean rows and corn rows, Spinach Johnson, the football field. That all happened a week ago, didn't it? Duane didn't know where he was going, but he knew where he was. Every step, he knew where he was. A few blocks, and he was near the downtown business district. Not a square, but that simple crossroads intersection with a blinking light counting down the seconds. From a block away, Duane saw the flashing stoplight and got in step with it. He just had to slow down a little. West of the bank, Duane could see motion, people in the street. Men were dismantling the carnival rides, turning wrenches and winding cables, lifting and carrying iron beams. Two women in bathrobes and curlers were sitting on the curb, sharing a cigarette. An old GMC truck hauling a travel trailer pulled out of the alley behind the grocery store and turned onto 2nd Street, heading out of town. Maybe he should hitch a ride. Maybe not. Duane turned his back on this whole scene and walked the other way. The motion and noise and diesel smell weren't sitting well with those hot dogs. He pulled one of the PBRs from the ring and popped it, unbuckled his belt and ran it through the plastic ring, a handy canteen, one last beer for later. He headed west down 3rd Street, past the closed Chrysler dealership, the closed-for-good Sinclair station, out of what could be called downtown and into the neighborhood. He passed long lines of houses of different era and style, vacant lots, mobile homes, some sad structures that only qualified as shacks. Walking down this street was like seeing a parade coming and hoping to leave before it got to you. An oblivious display of unevenness, of have and have not, of simple pride, complications, disregard, and bad luck, all strung up and ready to march. Duane had seen enough today, or yesterday, or last night, or whenever this started. He fixed his eyes on the sidewalk and kept going. Mildly drunk again, half asleep, shuffling, he kept going. Duane reached the last stretch that could be called a street, turned onto the first stretch that could be called a road, the road out of town. It probably had a name, but Duane didn't know the names or numbers of very many of the streets or county roads. He never needed to. He had always known where he was going back when he lived here. He knew where he was going now. And everybody else knew where everything was, knew where you meant, knew the place you were talking about. Addresses, street names, route numbers, who needs them? The asphalt didn't abruptly stop, more like it just tiredly gave up. Patches, random potholes, finally dissipating into stretches of gravel, then a few more feet of asphalt, then bare packed dirt, then gravel again, the final raggedy edge of the city limits. At the first curve was a large ornamental iron gate, out of place in context with the simple wired-together functionality of everything else in sight. This gate guarded the entrance to nothing, really. Just a field of weeds, a few pieces of broken concrete poking up here and there. Local story was that, in the late 19th century, there had been a small amusement park on these acres. Duane never could quite buy that Shorter ever had an amusement park. But that was the story. These scraps of town history had always floated around. Duane couldn't remember who told them to him. Couldn't remember not knowing these things. Almost like, if you were born here, certain knowledge was just absorbed. Communal memory. The other scrap that Duane recalled was that the rumored park had a name. Luna Park. He'd always liked the sound of that. Wished he'd lived here at a time when there was a place called Luna Park, where kids and families could go. But now it was just a gate to weeds and amnesia. Duane figured in another generation or so, that story and the name would be forgotten completely, erased altogether. What was that old saying? We die twice. Once when we stop breathing, and once when someone says our name for the very last time. Luna Park, Duane said out loud. Who knows? That might be the last time. Soybean field on the left, a few scattered houses on the right, the shell of the old Wheelman hatchery. Duane felt like almost everywhere he looked was where something used to be. And this was where I used to be, he thought. It was still night, but just barely. Duane was walking away from the sun, imagining that he was gaining another fraction of a second of the previous day. He wasn't ready for it to be tomorrow. Not yet. The road out of town was a long, straight shot west, ending in a hard left turn. Just like the tree Duane had passed hours ago, several teenagers over the years, driving like hell and not paying attention, had missed the turn, plowing through the wire fence, plowing dirt in the facing field. Nobody got hurt or died, far as Duane could remember. Just laughed at and in trouble with the folks and the farmer who owned the fence. Left. Hard left. And as many times as Duane had traveled this road, the sight around this blind corner always carried a strike of surprise, a view that didn't match the scale of anything else in the area. Thorny Crown Cemetery stretched out almost to the horizon, a vast ocean of stony whitecaps frozen in silent crash. The view gave first-time visitors the feeling of finding a forgotten arm of Arlington, somehow misplaced into rural Missouri. What had happened when the Coley River was dammed in the 1920s to form a chain of lakes and reservoirs? Several cemeteries had to be moved, coffins and vaults disinterred, headstones remounted. It was a major undertaking, but only an annoying hindrance to the scope of the dam project. Find the quickest solution. Another town story. Somebody knew somebody who knew somebody, got the contract and found some cheap land to relocate a dozen or so cemeteries. An army of unskilled labor got it all done in one summer. There were people buried here who had never set foot in this part of the state. One version of the story even had graves from North Arkansas being hauled up out of the Old South into this border state. There were families whose descendants might go looking for them someday and run into a dead end. Old great-great-great-grandpa just got up and moved. The story had frightened Duane when he was a kid, like these graves had truly been disturbed, and that was a bad thing. Particularly the idea of the lost Arkansas folks, not even resting in the state they called home. But now it was a mix of sad and ridiculous and just plain fucked up, though he couldn't imagine that it mattered much to anyone anymore. Duane stood at the high arch of the black iron entrance gate, an oversized architectural statement to match the scale of the grounds. Large cut metal letters, Thorny Crown Cemetery, arched over the gate, topped by a black metal crown of thorns that might have fit King Kong. The first angles of the rising sun were hitting the tops of the highest metal thorns on the crown, giving them bloody tips.
"Jesus would be proud," Duane said, then regretted it. Sounded stupid, like something he would say on the air.
He walked under the gate, elongated morning shadows starting to stretch down the gravel drive. His own, the fence, weeds, crown, shadow puppets telling a confusing Bible story. Duane had made out with different girls here, parking on whichever cross lane was furthest from the road and not occupied. Sometimes the location would creep out the girl he was with, adding another reason to be close and grabby. The cemetery had also been a favorite location for late-night beer parties, or just two or three friends and a six-pack. There was even a gravestone with the family name Beer carved in the granite, a favorite place to lean and drink and take cheesy flash photos. Whether making out or drinking or both, kids could count on not being disturbed here. The marshal rarely drove out this way since it technically wasn't in the city limits. Duane always figured old Marshal Oakley would rather have the kids parked and drinking rather than driving the streets and highways drunk and stupid and reckless. Standing there in that moment where dusk and dawn are indistinguishable, save the fall of the light, Duane could see the first details of the surrounding countryside, the long flat plain south down to the river, a far trim of green fields beyond the last gray of the tombstones. North, the rise of the hills, the variable greens and ambers of woods and crops and grazing lands. Cutting through that view was the embankment of the railroad line, a silver-edged ribbon dropped straight and long through the curves of the hills and valleys. In the middle distance, Duane could see the copper and orange of low fires along the railroad embankment, smoke just starting to rise, the periodic cutting and burning of the brush and weeds along the right-of-way. Duane watched the fire spread, too far away to tell if it was being tended by railroad workers, intentional or accidental. Duane was tired, so tired. Somewhere along the knotted path of last night, he had laid down his bag and failed to pick it back up. Just now noticed its absence. Clothes on his back, keys in his pocket, checked his wallet. No great loss. He knew where he was, knew his destination, even though it had not been a conscious decision. He cut diagonal through the near field of graves, the bier headstone just to his left, with two crushed empties sitting atop. The front and center part of the cemetery was actually for the people who had lived and died in Shorter, with spaces still available, here and there a recent occupant. The transplanted graves were out on the far reaches of the cemetery, crowded and tight, nobody knew moving in. Duane recognized the familiar family names, and the first names of people he had actually known, many of them old folks when he was young. But some of these names had actually touched his life, made a faint impression, or a deeper one. Every recognized stone brought up a story, many of tragedy, of dying young. There were two boys, cousins who drowned in the 50s when they were fishing, their grandfather going in after them, but regaining consciousness on the bank, all too late. There was a kid that Duane had known, actually younger than him, who'd gotten married, career military, a murder-suicide with his wife on some foreign airbase. Many car wrecks, a few hunting accidents, a few drink-to-deaths. Then he started seeing the names of people that were not tragedies, just solid folks who had lived good lives in the measure and proportion that their place and time offered them. Farmers, grocers, carpenters, teachers, mechanics, fathers, mothers, moms, 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 Duane's own grandparents, some aunts and uncles, people of kindness. And there they were, Mitchell and Carolyn Trotter, Duane's parents. This was the first time he had seen his mother's grave, the first time in a long time he'd seen his father's. It was a simple, low marker, no large marble slab, just the years of their births and deaths, his mom's final year in a slightly different font. The only personal touch was the image of a small hammer under his father's name, the trademark of his profession, and a simple heart under his mother's name, the shared trademark of many. Duane tried to figure out which way his parents actually lay, to the east or to the west of the headstone. His father's funeral had been so long ago that he couldn't get the bearings in his mind. Looking down the line of headstones, seeing some slight mounds and spotty grass on the east side of the marker line, Duane figured it out. Did headstone mean that their heads were at that end? He couldn't know. It didn't matter. Duane knelt and put his hands on the marker, a slight expectation to feel something. Grief, presence, gratitude. But there was nothing, just cold stone in the morning air. He touched his forehead to the sharp, chiseled edge. Nope, nothing. He turned, slid on down, took a lean on the headstone. He sat centered between what he imagined were the vaults, coffins, locked lids, pleated linings where his parents lay, dressed for church. He placed a hand on the ground on each side, felt the grass, roots entering the soil, the moisture of the dew settling into the dirt. A bug crawled over his fingers. Duane dug the toe of his shoe into the heel of the other, kicked it off into the grass, then the other shoe. He scooted forward, stretched out, looking backward over his head at the gravestone. Centered. 6 feet. He hadn't been this close to his parents in years, decades maybe, alive or not. He did feel something, though he couldn't put a name to it, just that proximity of existence. He looked up into the morning sky, the clear, promising blue of another day. Something touched his cheek. His eyes pulled focus on small flakes of ash that were afloat on the morning breeze, drifting slowly down to earth from the fires on the railroad line. Duane imagined they were the souls of the interred, coming back home after a night of transcendental travel, of flights and visitation, watching their old world go by without them.
No, it's snowing. I'm lying on my parents' grave in August, and it's starting to snow.
He liked that better. Duane smiled and fell asleep.